I feel like something good's gonna come. I don't know what's gonna come, but I feel like something good is gonna come.
I don't know. Like I watched probably 81 Knick regular season games a season in full, and I either watched it live or I like taped it and then watched it. Get off the game. It was a West Coast game or whatever. Like I pretty much, but like you know, I got to pick something.
Have you ever turned off a Knicks game for a lacrosse game?
For a regular season college lacrosse game, I didn't think so. Maybe high school. Maybe I was like, you know what?
I was thinking strictly professional here, but if you want to go college, regular season game sounds personal.
I don't know. I don't know if you know. Have I turned off a Knick game to watch an MLL game? Maybe.
All right, let's get started. What a start to the show. Welcome back to Last Man's Opinion. I'm your host, Tommy McGraw. With me tonight are the same three gentlemen as always, Dan Mara, Roland Varielli, and Rich Cakel.
I still can't believe that really happened.
I can't believe it really happened either.
Like,
was it game, I hope the listeners game, know this is a true story.
Was it game one?
Yeah, that was game one of
game
playoffs.
One.
Everything's on the line, game one.
Game one of one of the most anticipated Knicks playoff runs and playoff series, most highly anticipated first round playoff series, and, you know, Knicks as a two seed.
Probably in our adult life.
I mean, I still can't get over that.
Yeah.
It's something I will never get over. And honestly, if I ever see him in person again, I'm going to ask him about it. I'm going to ask him specifically why he chose to put on Michigan, Ohio State.
Well, remember, it wasn't
you know
Tommy.
It wasn't He allowed it.
Oh, I know. That's what I'm going to ask. If I ever see his brother-in-law again in person, I am going to confront him about this decision. I would love to know the mindset when he's picking up that remote. I'm like, oh, you know what's on? See how good old Michigan's doing. That regular season game's going.
Yeah. So, speaking of game one, you want to talk about game one with Indy?
Oh, yeah, you want to start with that? You want to start with game one? You want to talk about the Sixers-Knicks series at all? Want to end that one or just move right to Pacers?
I mean, you know, I don't want to. We can talk about it, but we shouldn't talk about it too much since the next series already started. I feel like it's time. It's time for the next series. But that was a hell of a first series.
Knicks Sixers.
Yeah.
That was crazy. I'm surprised Embiid survived the whole series.
I'm actually surprised he survived the whole series too.
Yeah. I mean, he still produced, but just if you were watching him play, he looked borderline crippled out there at points.
At points, yeah. I actually thought he looked better in some aspects as the season went on, as the series went on. Like, I thought game one, he looked like he was limping up and down the field. He was always out of shape the whole series, but, like, I thought game one, I was like, oh, man, there's no way, this guy. But then he did.
Yeah, I got to give him credit. He toughed his way through it. And, you know, coming into the series, you know, and we brought it up a bunch of times, was it kind of felt like the Sixers were always kind of quitting the last 2 years or so in the playoffs.
Yep.
You know, when things got tough. And, you know, I got to give them some credit because, you know, if that happened again this year, I think everybody would have had to seriously consider, can Embiid even be on the roster going forward if he was going to quit on
you
the team?
You thought it would have been that bad if they caved?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the fan base would have turned on him and there would have been no going back at that point.
So what do you credit for them not... not caving, because it looked like it was going to happen. Do you think it was the nurse effect?
I mean, you know, you probably can't pin it on one thing. I mean,
yeah,
you know, one, I, you know, obviously I think having nurse helped But again, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, so much you can tell about a coach. You know, maybe it helped not having Harden and Ben Simmons around. Maybe, you know, those are two.
Yeah, those are two big time quitters.
Yeah, those are two questionable characters. So
yeah, those two guys quit.
You know, and then you know, when without them around, you got Maxey as like your number two, who's a ball of joy. You know,
Yep.
You know,
Maxey had a good series.
I think all those factors combined, is what it was. And you know, the Knicks were probably the perfect team. Like, if you were going to quit, would be against this Knicks team because they play harder than any of the teams the Sixers played in prior years.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, because the Knicks will just keep coming at you. It's the biggest thing they do. No matter how, you know, I mean, yeah. No matter how big of a lead. Because I think Philly led, I think, at the end of the first quarter in like 5 of the 6 games. Not that the first quarter's, you know, but like, you know, Sixers almost always got off to a hot start, and Embiid would always look unstoppable those first 5-6 minutes of the game, and they jump out to like an early lead. You know, I mean, it kind of almost became a pattern of sorts, but still, like they're gonna keep coming. Yeah. So let me ask you a question about the series.
One real quick.
Yeah.
On that, the one game they didn't lead was the final game when we all thought it was gonna be over by the by halftime.
Yeah, and I'll give Philly credit; they came back. I thought it was over. I thought if the Knicks jumped out to an early lead in that game six, that Philly would quit.
And it wasn't even just an early lead; it was a fucking 20-point lead.
Oh yeah, they would. They it looked like it was going to be a slaughter, but they came back. So credit to them.
So and you know what? That makes for a great offseason, because if the Sixers went out quitting, it would have made the offseason so brutal.
Yeah,
you know, the fan base would have turned on the entire roster except Maxey.
Yep.
They returned on Nurse. They returned on Maury. But now the fans are optimistic right now. You know. So
I know. I see it on Twitter.
It changed everything. You know. So thank God they didn't quit. You know. Credit to the Knicks.
So
good first series. One of the best first series in the last 20 years.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And
that
I
could
mean,
have been a conference championship. The way how hard it was played.
Yeah, and I mean, in fairness to both teams, like that's not a 2-7 matchup, you know. I mean, that should be maybe
3-4 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
It should have been like a 2-3. Like it should be happening now, you know. Not that first. Like it should be the winner of this game is going to go play the Celtics. Not like that's really what it should have been.
Is your question going to talk about that series or going forward?
I have a segue question. I was going to ask about question about the Philly Knicks series first, but
real quick,
if you were Nick Nurse, what would you have done differently in that series? Do you think there are any second guesses, like major second guesses, not like, oh, I should have, you know, like if you had to make one change that he probably is kicking himself that he didn't do? I mean, is it too many minutes for Tobias? Giving up on Buddy Hield too quickly? I'm curious if there's something.
Yeah, I mean, there would have been three, I would say. One, you got to find a way to give Embiid breathers. And I know that's not universally agreed upon, because you look at the plus minus when he sat.
Yep.
But at the same time,
it's not B-ball Paul.
Yeah, I feel like there's points where you can at least sit him for 2 or 3 minutes. Like,
yeah.
That's got to be possible.
Yeah,
that would have been one. Number two is obviously less minutes for Toby. I mean,
yeah, that's universal. That is universal.
Like, you know, and I just don't understand how you didn't give, I don't know, Ricky Count. Like, I know Ricky Count was an undrafted rookie, but he had exactly what you were missing. Just someone who has heart.
Yep.
Like, that's exactly what you needed from Toby.
Mm-hmm.
He was so awful. He was the worst season of his career. Probably.
Yeah, and that last game was just terrible.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
Embarrassing.
He was definitely mentally checked out.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, he was.
Buddy, I would have liked to see some more minutes, especially in the final game after he got hot. Like, I don't think he played in the third quarter after that hot second quarter. I don't think he came back in the game until, like, to start the fourth quarter, maybe.
Yeah, he did. After his hot start, he almost, I think he barely saw, he saw 3 minutes in the second half. It was very little time.
Yeah, so that was very, very strange. You know, and one thing I got to say about the series, and, you know, what's done is done, and Knicks won, you know, so I hate criticizing Tibbs, but I'm putting Nurse in the same boat. I don't like how both coaches kind of cut off their bench, essentially, and went, like, with only, like, six men, borderline seven. Mm-hmm. And both coaches showed no trust in anybody, you know, on their roster.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, I don't know, I feel like both rosters proved during the season that they could be trusted. So, I don't know, it kind of surprised me a little bit, and I didn't love it for either coach.
Yeah, I was surprised. So I was more surprised with the Philly bench. I think the Knicks had clear advantages, so I could see why Tibbs didn't necessarily want to sway from that. There were two, you know, Bogdanovich injury was a killer because he was their other main guy off the bench. So then they lost him, and then they already don't have Randall. And so it was kind of tough. I don't know, from a Tibbs perspective, you know, I thought he played McBride a lot, which I thought was good. But, like, I just didn't know, once Bogdanovich went down, like, there's really very limited players on that bench that he could go to, you know? I didn't know who else he was going to bring in. Like, people clamor for Alec Burks, but, like, they forget how bad Burks was in the regular season. I mean, he got benched.
He's streaky, though. You can put him in for, like, 2 or 3 minutes and see how he performs.
Streaky,
and
yeah.
I think he's the type that you know pretty quickly, like...
Yeah, if he's on or not. Yeah. I'm surprised. We'll get to the Indiana series. I think he had, without Burks and now without Mitch, like, I think he has to try to get Burks some minutes without Bogdanovich and Mitch. I think he has to try to get Burks some minutes, even if it's just in the first half.
Yeah, just, you gotta find out, because you're not gonna make it through the playoffs.
No, six guys. Yeah. He goes seven technically.
Right.
With McBride.
So whether you believe in Burks or not, you gotta find out.
I agree. I mean, I think his, you know, I think, yeah, I agree. I think
Precious could have played some more minutes as well, especially with Mitch little, like, hampered by injury, you know, there was moments where Mitch kind of looked rough out there. Like, you know, Precious had a pretty good regular season when Mitch was out. Like, I don't know.
He did. Oh, I will say, in defense of Tibbs, I think even a hobbled Mitch is a better matchup against Embiid, just because Mitch is just so much bigger and, you know, stronger that he can at least body. That's why, like, the Mitch injury now, honestly, isn't that terrible, because I don't think he was going to be a good fit for this Indiana series, or even the Boston series if they win the series.
Yeah, but it's the rest of the playoffs. I mean, you don't want to lose any rotation value at that point.
No, but I think Precious can come in and fill those 20 minutes for the next two rounds. I think he's probably better to play the five against Indiana than Mitch is, because they basically, you know, they play with a stretch five, and Mitch is terrible.
Why don't you guys talk about the Indy series now? Because
Roland have a segue? Roland had a segue.
Yeah, so I was wondering, like, when the Knicks were playing Philly, they bounced back a lot more, and Dan was kind of calling the games before the Knicks would come back. I feel like not having Randall let them play a little more loosely and allowed them to stay competitive in games and come back. Does the loss of Randall actually, like, make the team better? So, I know he's not super great defensively. He puts a lot of points up, but it seems like they spread his points around pretty well. So, it also makes them a little smaller for the Indiana series. So, I was wondering if the loss of Randall was really a loss at all. Because he's just kind of depressing when you see him in the playoffs. He's just kind of like a sad sack.
He can be depressing.
Yeah. I I hate Randall.
I know, you're not a Randall fan.
But I have a hard time saying it's a good thing to lose an all-star player. I would quickly say, before Dan dives in, that, you know, I don't know if it makes the team better, but it's less of a loss than you would think when you lose an all-star player, just because the rest of the roster fits so well together, and just meshes so well together without Randle. Like, I think the team is worse without Randle, but it's not as worse as you would think.
Because now in, like, the Indiana series, they're playing fast. Like, I don't think they could play that fast with Randle on the court. You see them running, like, for a whole quarter at a time.
Yeah. I would say, well, first, quick correction. Randle is an all-star player. The all-NBA player. Two-time all-NBA player.
I'm sorry.
So, well, just to, like it's not like, oh, he's an all-star. Like, he was considered one of the top 15 players in the league. So, I would say, I mean, it's twofold. So, one, right, with Randle, you're taking away a player like that, it's going to hurt. But I don't know if the Knicks' ceiling changes with Randle. Like, if you put Randle on this team, the Knicks is still going to be probably the same level of underdog against the Celtics. Like, I think even with Randle, I don't think this. So I think their ceiling is the same. I think their ceiling heading into the playoffs, if they had Randle, would have been Eastern Conference Finals. And I think it's Eastern Conference Finals without Randle. So, like, in that piece of it, it probably doesn't matter. What obviously I think the impact of not having him is he's a rotation player who he was a starter. So you're basically taking away all those minutes and they don't have enough depth, which is eventually is going to kill the Knicks, is they're not going to have enough depth to. So like if you're taking Randle away and putting in somebody else that could eat up 15, 20 minutes a game with, you know, some production, you know, fine. But like, I think eventually the Knicks are going to lose because of depth and just not having enough talent. So, but like, honestly, with Randle or without Randle, I don't think the Knicks are going to get past the Eastern Conference Finals.
I don't know.
You think they would have?
Well, I would say right now, you know, I know Tommy gave you a hard time about it, but losing Porzingis is a bigger hit for that upcoming series than Tommy was giving credit for. Like, he's a big part.
Totally. He's critical to that team.
So I think, assuming, like, let's say he misses the series. Yeah. If the Knicks had Randle, yeah, I think the Knicks could beat the Celtics without Porzingis.
Okay. I guess I was assuming that everything I'm hearing is that Porzingis is expected to be back by the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, maybe he's not. But I was kind of going under that. If the Celtics are healthy and the Knicks have Randle, they're still losing. If the Celtics are healthy and the Knicks don't have Randle, they're still losing. I'm not saying they should get by the Pacers. They're favored to beat the Pacers this series. They would have been favored to beat the Pacers with Randle. I think it might be a little different of a victory. But I still think both teams healthy. I don't think the ceiling changes at all. But yeah, if you're going to tell me that that Porzingis is hurt and they're not going to have him, I mean, he does so much for that fucking team, right? I mean, yeah. He's a 40% three-point shooter at the five spot. So who's guarding him? You're going to have to, you know, if you're the Knicks, let's say, you know, if everybody was healthy, like, you'd put Mitch on him. Okay, so now your shot blocker is out guarding Porzingis at the three-point line. And then you have Tatum, Brown, White, all those guys just slashing to the basket without a rim protector. And that's what makes the Celtics so good, is that, you know, and if the big tries to help, if you do a pick and roll and you know, Porzingis can put it on the floor and get to the basket, he's obviously a very good player, Porzingis, but like, with that Celtic team and all those options, he basically is so critical to what they do.
He's a great player when he's in that situation, I think.
Totally, because he doesn't have to initiate. Him just standing at the top of the key behind the three-point line, it just opens up the entire floor for Tatum and Brown.
But he's a glue player. Like, he ties the whole team together. Like, you need him there for all the other pieces to work. Otherwise, like, everyone's, like, you know, smashing at each other trying to get working.
Yeah. Like, I actually don't even know. I mean, not like it's going to matter this series, but who played the five for them tonight? Was it Horford?
I didn't watch tonight's game, but I know during the season when Porzingis didn't play, yeah, it was Horford that stepped in.
How old is he?
I mean, he's got to be like 38, 39.
Yeah, he's up there. Yeah.
You know, that was actually, I don't know if we want to get into this now or later. It was a question I had about the NBA, you know, about age and what is old these days, you know, with...
Yeah, Harford played center.
You know, like...
You all know who the oldest person in the NBA is?
Al Horford. Is it LeBron?
Yep, 39 years, 129 days old.
And who's that, LeBron or Al Horford?
LeBron. Harford's 37, I just left.
Oh, is he? I thought he was at least 38.
No, 37. Oh, let's see when he turns 38.
Now, Roland, did you quickly ask Google who is the oldest, or do you have, yes. like...
Yeah, I have instant recall of oldest.
He knows everything.
No, I was going to ask if you pulled up a list that had like.
I also have it. So number two, I was going to guess. Guess who number two is? Easily guessable.
Lowry.
I was going to say Lowry.
PJ Tucker.
Oh, okay. PJ Tucker. He's 38, isn't it?
Can you tell me how many players there are in the NBA above the age of 36?
Yes.
We'll say above the age of 35.
Oh, okay. Now it gets bigger, much bigger. All right.
There's a lot of 35-year-olds, or
yeah, there are a lot of 30. Let's say 36. So over 36, I'll start from the bottom, going up from youngest to oldest. Brooke Lopez, Steph Curry, Javale McGee.
Is Robin Lopez out of the league? Are they twins?
Brooke Lopez. Sorry.
Yeah, then Robin is twin brothers.
Oh.
Maybe not. I don't know. Keep going.
Mike Conley Jr., mm-hmm. Joe Ingles, James Johnson, Wesley Matthews, Jeff Green.
Green's still playing.
James Johnson, Wesley Matthews, Jeff Green are all 37. Al Horford, 37, basically 38.
Yeah,
37 years, 340 days.
Yeah, it's like 2 weeks he turns 38, yeah.
Garrett Temple, exactly 38 years. Really? This is his birthday?
Happy birthday, Garrett. May 8th.
All right. Happy birthday when this podcast gets published. Kyle Lowry, 38 years, 44 days. Taj Gibson, I didn't think he was that old.
Oh, yeah.
Knicks 38 years, 319.
Tibbs legend.
Now cracking 39 years, there are three players. Chris LeBron. Paul, PJ Tucker, 39? And LeBron James.
Wow.
Chris Paul's birthday was a few days ago. PJ Tucker is the day after him. So Chris Paul's 39 years, 2 days. PJ Tucker's 39 years, 3 days.
Wow. I mean, so, the biggest thing with the age question that you're asking, right, is basically like, these guys can still play. It's how much can they play, right? Like, they can't play.
Like, they can't be the best player on contender anymore.
No, I mean, they have to be, but I don't even think they have to be minutes restrictions, games restrictions. You know what I mean? Like these. But what happens? Like, and you see this almost every year, I think, with like those players, is even if you can manage them in the regular season, right? Like, you can manage their health, you can manage their minutes, you can take off games, and like maybe this year is kind of an outlier because Embiid got hurt earlier. But like you see with Embiid, like then you get to the playoffs, and then it's you're playing every other day. And it's intense, crazy basketball for weeks on end. And like, that's what these guys who are like 37, 38, 36, like, that's where they're going to get in trouble.
You know who's almost 35?
Paul George.
Jimmy Butler.
Oh, yeah. Jimmy is, yeah, that's right.
And Paul George, I would assume too.
Yeah, I think they're both going to be 35 soon.
Well, you know, and that was part of my question, is because Sixers fans are talking about the age thing. And I remember like 2 years ago or 3 years ago when Jimmy was leaving Philly, everyone was like, oh, he's 31. You know, he's old
on the downside, blah, blah, blah.
But, you know, because I think it's slow for people to adapt that 31 isn't as old as 31 used to be in all of sports.
No, but in fairness, though, Jimmy Butler plays 50 games a season, 55 games a season. Like, I know Miami's had nice playoff runs a couple times, like last year and obviously, but like, they were a play-in team because Jimmy Butler doesn't play during the regular season, you know?
Right. But don't limit it to Jimmy. I mean, just think about how many players play and productively play until their mid-30s
now. Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah, but you have to kind of go...
The 35s are like pretty... Like, there are some all-stars in the 35s for sure.
And I think you have to go in, Like if you're Philly, sure.
I'll show you.
Right. If you're Philly and your two main options are in the offseason are like Jimmy Butler and Paul George, like, okay, you have to realize, you know, what you're getting out of him, right? You have to realize Jimmy Butler's going to play 55 games a season, right? And have to deal with that. Or
limited minutes in half the games or something.
Yeah,
but, you know, that's also a tough question, a tough statement, too, because, you know, it's not just older players. It's players all around that are getting hurt every year. Like, you know, I'd love to see the numbers by age because, again, it's not just older players that are, you know, have injury problems all the time. It's every age bracket. You know, minus if you get into the playoffs,
I mean, you just need to get to the playoffs, right? With a lot of these guys, and then they know what to do, you know, and then they play themselves into the ground.
But how?
I don't want to say the regular season doesn't matter, but if you get a ticket to the show,
what'd you say? It doesn't matter.
It does, to an extent.
I think. I don't know.
If you get a good 50 games out of, you know, Kevin Durant. And then you get playoff Kevin Durant, it's worth it. You know what I mean? Like, that's a trade-off almost every team would take.
Right, for sure.
Yeah, but, oh my goodness. But Josh Giddey just shot one of the ugliest shots I've ever seen. But I would say, like, yes, however, like even look at, I know not every player is going to have a good playoff game or whatever. But, like, I think for those older players, when they get to the playoffs, like, Paul George isn't good. You know, Paul George in the playoffs will have maybe one, maybe two, if he's lucky, good games a week. Like, he just won't be able to, like, bring it every night, you know, like he used to, like, 5 years ago. Like, it's just going to be bad because, you know, James Harden's a terrible player, but, like, just in general, like, he can't. I think that's kind of the trade-off that you have to admit, like, accept. If you're Philly or, you know, going after like a Paul George or a Jimmy Butler, that they're going to play 50 games and then you have to hope that they get healthy in the playoffs. I mean, that's what the Clippers banked on with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, right?
Right. And
that's never worked.
I mean, I'd rather have Kawhi than the other two. And
me too, but Kawhi never plays. Do you?
Right.
You know, like that. Like, that's the thing. Like Kawhi never plays. Like I can't remember. Kawhi played less 2 years. Kawhi plays like two games in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, he started doing this back in, you know, when he was in his mid-20s, taking games off for no reason, like.
Yeah, well, he took games off for no reason, but now he can't even play. Like San Antonio built the whole, not San Antonio, Clippers built the whole thing around Kawhi and Paul George and then Harden, but Kawhi never plays. He just never plays.
By the way, I can't believe he's been in LA for 5 years already.
Right? It doesn't feel like it.
It feels like he just went there like 2 years ago.
Yeah, because he never plays. You're like, oh, that's right. He plays for the Clippers. I mean, that.
Well,
like,
no, it's not just that. It's just because he's the lamest fucking superstar there's ever been.
Oh, well, yeah.
Has there ever been a star player with less personality than him?
Not in the NBA.
Yeah, in the NBA, obviously.
Yeah, I was going to go Mike Trout for baseball, but. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the NBA, yes.
Oof,
but yeah. I mean, just looking back, right, since he got to the Clippers, he's never played. I mean, this season he played 68 games, which I can't believe, but then he didn't play in the playoffs. So what good did that do?
That's kind of crazy that he played 68 games. That's got to be near the high for his career, I would think.
He had a couple years in San Antonio where he played 74 and 72.
So it's his third highest in his career?
Third highest in his career, yeah.
When he used to take games off on purpose in his 20s?
Yeah.
That's strange.
It is super strange. So he played 68 games this year, but then got hurt and didn't play in the playoffs at all. He played one game and he was absolutely awful.
Right.
And then he played 50 games last year. Then the year before, he missed the entire season because of the ACL injury. Then he played 50 games the year before, 57 the year before that, and then he was in Toronto for that 1 year. He only played 60 games in Toronto. The guy never played. So, like, I don't know. Like, that's All right, last Philly question, then let's get to the Pacers.
I had one other before we leave the NBA too. I have one other NBA question as well, but we can do that after the Pacers.
All right. So what? Pacers moratorium, season's over.
Pictures.
What do you dream off season?
Subliminal.
Yeah.
Dream off season. What are they doing? They have all this cap space. Getting rid of Toby.
I mean, obviously,
we don't need to go through. We don't need to go through like, oh, are they going to bring back Lowry? Are they going to bring back Oubre? Like, I don't really care about those guys. Those are secondary, you know, minor right. players. Like, what's their big move or two big moves that you want to say?
This is a tough question because normally, I feel like they're kind of limited to the moves they can do, just because of. You know, roster construction, you know, cap space, you know, draft picks. But this year, pretty much everything's on the table.
Yeah, wow.
You know, so it's kind of hard to answer. And there's no, as of right now, I can't think of any big free agents besides Paul George. Like, who else is out there? So for me, I can't answer, but I will tell you, what Sixers fans in general are going through.
Yeah, go ahead. What do they want?
And it's completely spread. There's not one answer at this point.
Yep.
Obviously, a lot of people like the Paul George route strictly, and they only like it if it's like a 2-year deal. If it's a 5-year deal, obviously against it.
But obviously, he's going to want a max. Supposedly, he wants a max.
Yeah, but if they give him the max salary for 2 years, you know, that's still technically a max.
Yep,
so they're okay with that because the reason the fans are okay with that is because then if you compare that to, you know, we'll go to next, the Jimmy Butler situation, you get, you know, a player with the same concerns, you know, health, age, whatever.
Yeah.
But with Paul George, you're not giving up any first-round picks. So let's say you sign Paul George for 2 years, okay, and it doesn't work out. Guess what? You get to keep all your first-round picks.
Yep. True.
So that's why fans like that. Then the next thing is Jimmy Butler. Everybody loves Jimmy.
Yeah.
You know, then, you know, he's turning 35. You got to give up how many first round picks to get him.
Yep.
You know, obviously people would love that. You know, some people are saying Kevin Durant because, you know, they think the Suns got to blow it up. But again, same thing. You got to trade a bunch of first round picks for an older guy there. So, you know, all those options, you know, do you want to give up 3 or 4 or 5 first-round picks for a dude that might just get hurt? You know, that's...
Yeah, I know.
You know, and then the other options are, you know, some people just want to sign a bunch of role players, you know, go into the off-season and see what teams want to salary dump players because, you know, with the new...
Yep. New CBA. They're
going to
have to.
There's going to be a lot of teams looking to shed salary. So,
do you think they need I think they need a wing player, would be my. Like, if I'm looking for a position, I think they need like a two way wing, would be my folly.
Yeah. And that's what Morey had his press conference yesterday, I think it was. And he was asked, what's the biggest need for the Sixers? And he said, a wing. He said, somebody that doesn't play the same position as Maxey. And Embiid, and it's got to be a wing, and they have to be able to produce in the playoffs. I think that was a shot against Toby.
it certainly sounds like it.
Yeah, because he said the words, they have to be able to produce in the playoffs.
Damn.
those GMs were taking a lot of shots the other day. Pat Riley, it was wild.
But, and, you know, to be fair to him, you know, the people asked him, in that same presser, they asked him, you know, about Toby, and he gave a political response. He's like, yeah, we want to sign all our free agents, you know, if the money works.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm going to run through real quickly a couple of the top free agents available this offseason. LeBron James. I've heard rumors about him.
There Paul are George. Some fans that want him.
I know. Paul George.
Yep.
Klay Thompson, I don't think so.
No, I want no part of him.
Yeah, Toby, no. James Harden, no.
No.
Siakam would be interesting. I think Indiana is going to give him a max, but that would be interesting.
Yeah, they kind of have to, I think.
I think so, too. Gordon Hayward, no. Kyle Lowry, I mean, you might re-sign him, but whatever.
Whatever. He's a vet minimum.
Yeah. DeMar DeRozan.
And no thanks.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's coming for like a minimum, okay, but he wants to get paid again.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Buddy Hield, whatever.
Sounds like they're not bringing him back.
Bruce Brown, whatever.
I like Bruce Brown, but again,
Bruce Brown too, but he's going to be a, you know,
middle whatever. Tier player.
Yeah, exactly. Fournier, no. OG Anunoby, no. D'Angelo Russell, no. Gary Trent Jr., no.
I mean, I like OG.
Yeah, but I think the Knicks are going to give him whatever he wants.
Right.
I don't think he's leaving the Knicks. Quickly is a free agent.
Yeah, no thanks. I don't like his fit.
Malik Monk?
I would like him.
That wouldn't be a bad one. He'd actually be nice. You're not going to do Miles Bridges. That seems crazy to me.
Yeah,
not going to do that.
I was waiting for Rich to be like, actually, I'm all in on him.
Sadiq Bey, no. You don't want him.
No.
I mean, there's, you know, Wesley Matthews, no. No. Precious Achiuwa. Maxi must be restricted, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the free agent market is kind of weak.
Yeah, it is kind of weak. Yeah, I don't know who you know.
I mean, what was there, 5 players that we would say yes to?
Yeah, not a ton. I mean, Siakam would be interesting if they if Indiana lets him go. Obviously, the same thing with OG, but I don't think the Knicks or Pacers are gonna. I think they're gonna give him whatever those guys want.
Yeah, I think they have to. I mean,
I think they have to too.
Like, I don't know, do both teams have to max those guys?
I don't know. I think from what I heard, Indiana's gonna give Siakam a max.
I mean, Siakam, I think, has to get a max more than OG, but I think the market would arguably have more teams interested in OG, I would think, right? Just
yeah, maybe. His injury history isn't great.
Right.
He's somebody else that plays 60 games a year.
Right. He's an interesting contract situation, like seeing what he's going to demand just because, you know, you got the injury history.
Yeah.
And it seems to happen every single year.
Yeah,
but
when he's on the court,
any roster,
and when he's on the court, he's. I'm going to make a comparison. Obviously, he's not as good, but he's like, he's like Kawhi Leonard light.
Yeah, I agree.
He's like, as good defensively. Obviously, not as good offensively, but he's just an unbelievable defensive player. He's strong, can you know, play defense against literally any single position on the court.
Yeah, if I was another team in the NBA, I would offer him a ridiculous contract just to make the Knicks pay up for him.
that's the Bill Simmons approach. He's always like, if I have a ton of cap space, why wouldn't I try to get, you know, basically what happened with B-Ball Paul?
Yeah, but that was a low level contract though. That was
a low level, but it was still hilarious. Right. I mean, maybe not being a Sixers fan, but I mean, it's one of the reasons with the Knicks and Emmanuel quickly why they ended up trading him. The Knicks knew they weren't going to be able to re-sign him because there are too many teams out there that needed a point guard that there was a good chance, like a San Antonio or whomever, might like give him a poison pill and then the Knicks is stuck. They're either going to lose him for nothing or they got to re-sign him to a shitty contract.
Yeah, and real quickly for the B-ball Paul, I still don't consider that a poison pill because, one, it was like...
No, it wasn't that bad.
It was $8 million for B-ball Paul... For a player that everybody wanted the Sixers to sign long-term anyway. So it was like, okay, you're making us guarantee him a second season? If we make it to the second round, big fucking deal.
Yeah, I know. It really wasn't that big of a deal. But you rarely see, like, Simmons are always like, teams should, you know, I mean, you rarely see teams do anything to try to screw over other teams. And this was the closest it got. You know, so it's
I agree with that Simmons approach, though. I mean, teams should do that more often.
They should. Like, why not? Like, San Antonio, why don't you just go see, like, if there's a risk? Because, I mean, supposedly teams don't like to do it because they don't want it. They don't want other teams to do it to them. So it's almost like an unwritten rule that none of them do it to each other.
Well, I think I think you have to have a cap hold on that player so you can't sign someone else until... Because, you know, like the Sixers, they waited. So their response was, let's wait till the last possible minute to say, hey, we're going to match it. Because then Danny Ainge can't do anything with that money until we respond.
Well, last thing, we'll get to Knicks Pacers. I was going to say,
any more time comes out of your Knick time, Dan.
I think, but didn't they do that to DeAndre Ayton? I forget who gave him the contract, but then Phoenix ended up having to max him, and they hated doing it, and then they ended up trading him.
Right. Well, that was a mistake. They probably shouldn't have even...
Probably should have just let him walk.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was just a mistake. All right, Roland.
Knicks Pacers. All right, Dan, you got 15 minutes.
What do you think? What do you think of game one?
Yeah,
it's going to be a rough series. I think it's going to be close every game. I think Pacers played almost at their cap, though. If Pacers starters scored a little bit more, I would say that's their like theoretic maximum. I think they scored about as well as they could have. You know, Halliburton didn't score quite as many.
Minus their best player having a terrible game.
Yeah, but the bench scored like unbelievably. So, I mean, how much better are you really going to do from that on average? I don't think much better.
But their best player could have a normal game, though. You know, so it kind of evens out, I think.
Yeah, but I think they depend on their bench so much that I think it evens out. You're going to depress the bench scoring if he's scoring a lot, I think. They also scored, I think, I didn't look at the field goal percentage, but I feel like the bench was extremely efficient. That was just my intuition, though. The only problem is they play well against Tibbs' strategy. So, like, the Pacers, because they can rotate through so many people, the Knicks have three big people down now. It's going to be hard for them to keep up, I think, and not burn out their players. So even if they make it through the series, it may be tough to even scrap together in the next series.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest concern, is the Pacers just running the Knicks into the ground. I don't know, but Rich, you saw the Halliburton stats since he supposedly hurt his hamstring or whatever. I mean, he's not the same player. If this is the best Halliburton's going to play this series, and maybe he can get a little better, but the stats for the past 3 months back up, like, this is kind of who he is now.
That's you know? Fair point. Yeah.
Maybe he can't expect
him to be any better.
Yeah. I mean, yesterday was really bad. He could probably get a little better, but like, he's not November Halliburton where everyone's like, oh shit, this guy's like really good. I think he's just,
this guy's a future star.
Yeah. Yeah. I he's not. I mean, he is, but like, he's not playing like it now.
Well, is he a future star if he's closer to the second half of the season player than the first half?
No, I mean, first half, he's a star.
Right.
Second half, he's just like league average.
Right. So if he's in the middle of that, he's not even an all-star player, though. He's a good role player at that point.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he's a good role. And like, to me, like, because of the biggest thing with Halliburton, I think, is in order to win on the road in the playoffs, I'm a big believer that it has to be your star player that wins that game. You know, like, you know, whether it's Embiid or Maxey or whoever. I am going to die.
Right, so it's got to be him or Siakam.
Yeah, it has to be one of those two guys. Can Siakam do it? I don't think so. Honestly, I don't think so. I don't think he's that good of an offensive player that he can carry him. I think Halliburton can. And that's why I kind of like the Knicks in the series, because watching game one, if I'm concerned from the Knicks standpoint, it's because I think the Pacers can run them off the floor, because I think they're super fast, super athletic. They can go 8 or 9 guys and they're all just going to run up and down the court all game. And it's like, okay, how are the Knicks going to be able to handle that? Like, that would be my concern. But on the flip side, like you saw it in the fourth quarter, like I don't think the Pacers have anybody that can stop Jalen Brunson. Like, I think Philly did a good job. Philly had good defenders. They could put Oubre on him. They could put Batum on him. You force him into Embiid, who's obviously one of the best defensive centers in the league. Like, so there's a lot of things they could do with Brunson. Like, I don't think Indiana could do anything with Brunson. Who are they going to... They had their two best defenders try to play him. And so that's where if I'm Indy, like I'm thinking, if I'm the Knicks, we should be able to keep these games close in the fourth quarter. And then in the fourth quarter, the Knicks defense tightens up, and that's what happened last night. The Knicks defense tightened up. Indiana couldn't score, and then it was just Jalen Brunson time, and they couldn't stop him. They could not stop Jalen Brunson. He got wherever he wanted on the court, and the Knicks either got a wide open three or Jalen Brunson finished it himself.
Another weird thing is the Pacers don't shoot very much for a fast team. Like, they try to penetrate all the time, so they're always driving towards the hoop. So even if you play big, like, you can really jam up the inside and block him. Like,
because they're missing a shooter. They don't.
Right. Yeah. So you want to play small against them because they're so fast, but you can really jam up the middle even with big men. So you don't need to play small to face off against them, I don't think.
No, and they don't have enough. I mean, the Pacers' biggest strength is, are they just going to try to beat the Knicks up and down the court all game and see if they can get... But, like, the Pacers don't play defense. So, like if the Knicks get a lead heading into the fourth quarter, are the Pacers going to be able to get stops? Like, the reverse happened last night. Like the Knicks tightened up their D. Tibbs made a couple of adjustments. They funneled everything through OG, who stripped the ball or just played passing lanes and disrupted their entire offense in the fourth quarter. And then the Knicks just methodically whittled the lead down because the Pacers couldn't get any stops. So, you know, like I get that that's the Pacers' strategy, but, like, I just don't think they're going to be able to get a big enough lead heading into the fourth, where I don't think the Knicks will be able to kind of tighten it up. Again, maybe the Knicks hit a wall and they're just completely fatigued, and that's why you probably need to look at, like, we have to... McBride only played 11 minutes last night. He didn't have a good game in those 11 minutes, but he has to. I'm sure your Madden chat was going up in arms with Miles' minutes. But, like, yeah, if he's your sixth man off the bench, he has to play 20 to 25 minutes a game to give DiVincenzo and Brunson and Hart all a couple minute break throughout the game. Like,
You know who the key is.
Who's the key?
My boy. DDV.
DDV, Big Ragu.
Whenever he has a good game, Knicks win.
Big Ragu. I mean,
his threes brought the game back several times.
Yeah.
So when he's hitting them, I mean, it's a big, like, confidence booster, I feel like, on the team.
Well, plus he's basically their second score. And that's the other problem why the Knicks ceiling is somewhat, you know, low or whatever, right? Because, like, the Knicks don't have a reliable second scorer. Like, you could always say, like, Philly, it's going to be Embiid and Maxey. And then their issue was they have no other score. They had nobody else to score. The Knicks have people, like, you know, Hart could have a good game. DiVincenzo could have a good game. OG could have a good game. McBride could have a good game. But you never know which one it's going to be. And you just hope it's one of them. And that's kind of the challenge with the Knicks, is not a consistent guy. But I think they should be
better that way.
Yeah, but you never know. So it might be none of them. Like, what happens if none of those guys are hitting shots?
I think we've seen those games.
yeah. Like, that's the only problem. But, like, the defense is good enough. You know, that's the thing. Like, they should be in. And, like, if I'm the Knicks also looking positively, right, they didn't have anybody that could guard Jalen Brunson. I'll be curious to see what Indy does tomorrow night, because I feel like they need to do something to fix that issue.
Like, you don't, and I said this in the chat, you don't think that out of everyone, TJ played him the best just because he was, like, annoying him?
Yeah, but they all try to annoy him. I don't know. I don't think...
Like, I'm not saying TJ's going to shut him down or really slow him down. I just think... I think TJ played a fantastic game on both sides of the ball. Like, you know, he had some clutch steals.
He did, but he's not going to... But if you're going to tell me that Indiana's best hope is putting TJ McConnell on Jalen Brunson, next are going to win the series.
I think they need to mix it in more than they did. Like, not all game, but they need to mix it in, because TJ's also one of those players that he's going to make Brunson work hard for his points.
Yeah, I mean, but they all try to do that. They try to pick him up, you know, 94 feet away from the basket, like Nimhart and all those guys. Just try to be... Basically, that's what they did. They basically tried to pick him up, all up, you know, as soon as he got the ball, they were picking him up the court. And, you know, I think that's okay, but I think, like, that's the strategy. Indiana's strategy was clearly to try to wear the Knicks out, and specifically wear Brunson out. I thought that was their game one strategy.
I think that's just the way
that might be their style of play. Yeah, that might be
the. Yeah, I don't know if that's their strategy. That's just how they play.
That just might be the strategy against everybody, just to wear everybody down. But, like, I think if you're the Knicks, you could have Hart or DiVincenzo bring the ball up. Like, I don't think it's that, you know, like, I don't think that's that big of a deal, you know, like, I don't think it's that big of a deal to have one of those two guys bring the ball up. Or
like, I mean, if the Knicks did that, I would mix in some press coverage on those guys and see if you can fluster them into some turnovers. They already had
like the full court press going and basically had some unforced errors.
Yeah, they did have a couple of unforced errors, which I feel like the Knicks will clean up fairly. I mean, it was, you know, I don't think they were expecting them to pick
it's
up.
It's such a different court series than the Sixers series, though, like completely different.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, the Pacers are just going to want to speed the Knicks up, and they do that by full court press and all this other stuff. But, like, I don't know, once it got over half court, or, you know, Hartenstein brought the ball up one time, and then it was one pass, and nobody guarded anybody else, and it was an easy like, the Pacers are just such a, it's just a frantic.
I feel like they have a lot of, like, brain farts where they forget to cover someone or, like, forget to rotate.
Yeah, no, there's a ton of brain farts. And it's just like they're just not disciplined and they're not a good defensive team. And so like that's basically like, yeah, that's how they have to play. They have to pick you up 94 feet and play crazy, hope to tire you out, hope that you get it across, you know, with 14 seconds left and can't get into your sets. But then like that's okay if they do that. But then I feel like the Knicks against the Sixers, both sides, there was always a lot of difficult shots. Against the Pacers, the Knicks basically got almost any shot that they wanted. Once they got across half court, like, that defense. So, yeah, I mean, and we talked about this. They should probably play TJ McConnell more because I think offensively he was giving the Knicks a much harder time than Haliburton. Much harder time, right?
For sure. But again, you know, he's a little dude. Like, he can't – I think you just got to ride him until he's just not working anymore because TJ, I mean – he can only do so much. He's limited by his size and everything, you know, but last night he was clearly working in whatever he was doing. Like, he scored points, he ran the offense, he was passing the ball, and defensively, I think he had 3 or 4 steals, you know, like, you know, he was a pest. You know, he wasn't a liability anywhere out there last night, and I think last night was one of those games where you could have ridden him harder because he's not going to play like that every night.
No, he's not.
I just thought in one game sample, they made a mistake by underplaying him.
I would agree with that. He played 22 minutes and had 18 points.
He could have played at least another 4-minute spurt in that fourth quarter. I don't know how much he played in that fourth quarter, but to me it felt
how much he played either.
It felt like he didn't play in that fourth quarter.
No, I mean their backcourt is Haliburton and Nemhard.
Right,
and Haliburton played.
I get it. He's tough to fit in crunch time and everything with them, but I don't know. Sometimes, you know, and I know
you got to run with that. Well,
you got to feel the flow of the game. You got to feel who's hot, who's feeling it, who's not. Like,
and I think in especially when it's a road game in the playoffs. Like, I think that's one where like you have to figure out a way to win that game. Like, is the bench, or is TJ McConnell going? TJ McConnell had 18 points in 22 minutes. You know,
that's crazy for him.
Is he going to do that in game two? To me, if you're a coach, you have to figure out how to win one game on the road. That's all you have to do. Like, the Knicks have to figure out if they want to end this series quickly, they have to win game two, and then figure out how to win one game in Indiana. If they can figure out how to win one game in Indiana, Pacers are in big trouble. And if I'm the Knicks, like, okay, that could be a Brunson game. Can Brunson just carry us, score 50 and just carry us 1 minute? Or, you know, or is McBride, you know, whatever. Is that going to be the McBride game? Like game one for Indiana, that could have been the TJ McConnell game.
Burks. The Burks game.
The Burks game, yeah. Yeah, dust him off.
He can put up 25-30.
He can. He could also have 5 turnovers.
Game one felt like a vibe where it could have been the TJ game. Like, I felt...
Yeah, it could very well have been the TJ game.
It just pained me when he didn't get the money minutes.
Yeah, yeah. No, it could certainly have been the TJ game. And I think, you know, yeah, I think that those are the tough decisions for the coach. Like, okay, it's only game one. Like, here's the other thing, right? It's only game one. So you know you're going to need Nemhard, and you know you're going to need Haliburton. So you're going to bench those guys for, like, I don't know. Like, that's the other piece of it, right? Like you don't want them to get pissed off that you're going to, like, you know, a bench guy when you've been the starter all season.
Right.
Right?
I get it. Yeah.
Like that's the other side of it. Like I was watching the Timberwolves Nuggets game one. I mean, Timberwolves were dominating, and Towns, this is a game one, so Towns, and they basically sat Towns almost the entire fourth quarter, and then they put him in, I think, with like 2 or 3 minutes left, but the game was already decided. But they put him in probably because they didn't want him to get pissed off that he didn't play the entire fourth quarter.
Right.
You know, like, so like, I think there's that type of stuff that probably plays into it more than what we kind of, you know, think. But I agree. I mean, I think you got to find, if I'm the road team in one of these series, I'm not saying that Indiana can't come back and win this series, but like, if I'm the road team, to me, that game one is the most winnable of the first two home games or away games if you're the away seed, right? Like, it's the first game of the series. Nobody really knows what to expect, how you're going to come out in coverage. Like, you can kind of surprise the team. Maybe they're a little tense. To me, game one is the easiest of the first two games to steal for a road team. And I think Indiana probably should have stole game one.
Yep. Yeah, I'm calling the series.
We're just calling the series, Mullet.
Damn. Good. I gave Dan shit on the Denver series, but he was right, I think. Woo! So I give Dan props. And I don't know. I'll give Rich shit on this series. I don't think it's over.
I mean, to be fair, you know, before the series started, I said I thought Knicks were going to win in five. So, I mean, I kind of called it. I mean,
yeah, you did think it was
before the series. So, yeah, I don't think I'm jumping the gun here. I mean, the Knicks were always favored. And you know, now that Indy lost, the game that, you know, I agree with Dan, is probably the most winnable game in theory, you know.
Yeah.
Their win percentage goes down a lot overall now.
I think so, too. And I think, you know, maybe Halliburton didn't play. I mean, Halliburton didn't play good in that first game. But, like, Halliburton didn't play good in that first game. But, like, almost the rest of the team did. Like, Miles Turner played great. Obi Toppin, TJ McConnell. Like, you can go down the list of, like, you know, Siakam maybe didn't have a great game, but I thought he played pretty good.
He played
By
the way, can we pause real quick for Obi and say how ballsy it was for him to attempt that between fucking the legs?
He
earned all 12 of those points.
Well, especially because
he acted like he put up 60 points that night or something.
Especially because he tried the same dunk against the Knicks. Honestly, it was the exact same situation. You know, obviously not the playoffs, but it was same side of the court, game, all this other stuff.
Barely and he barely made that dunk also, way.
And he did it in February, and he fired it off the back of the rim and completely missed the dunk.
Yeah, I remember that one. I remember it.
So, like, for him to do the exact same thing in a pretty close playoff game.
Right.
Like, imagine if he missed that dunk.
If he misses that dunk, he doesn't come to the next game.
No, you got to take him out immediately. He doesn't even get off the floor. Yeah, I got to kick him off the floor. I can't believe. And then I was texting somebody when that happened, and we were both basically like, you can't even take Indiana seriously. Like, this is a fucking playoff game.
Yeah.
You're on the road.
They are unserious people.
They're totally unserious. Like, you cannot go in and be like, in a close game, I mean, you're up 20 points, fine. You're up 20 in the fourth quarter, fine. Like, do whatever, right?
Right.
But this was like late third quarter, the second half of a close game. I don't know. They might have even been losing at the time. I don't even know. And like, you do like that.
I think they were up by like 8 to 10 or something at the
time.
Yeah.
So. Okay. So maybe this game. I don't think they ever got. I think their largest lead was 9 all game. So maybe it was 8 or 9. So somewhere around there. Either way, right? Like, what the fuck are you doing? And yeah, like, right then, they did that, and I'm like, okay, this team isn't even serious. Like, they're completely unserious. Like, what are you doing?
But you know what? I will say props to him for actually making it with that pressure, like.
Oh, huge amount of pressure. Yeah. I mean, it was impressive. It was great. But, like, my mind kept going, like, oh, man. He missed this dunk 3 months ago, 4 months ago, and he's trying it again? What a fucking idiot. And yeah, and then he watched, and like, But like same thing with like Knicks had a breakaway or a fast break. I forget at what point in the game. I think it was a close, maybe it was the fourth quarter. And like I forget who was going for the dunk. Maybe it was DiVincenzo or OG. I forget. Or maybe it was OG. And like Halliburton was back. He didn't even try to play defense. He literally stopped and just let him have the dunk. And I'm like, dude, this is to tie the game. Do something. Like he stopped running back.
And it was like, OG. He looked around like, isn't anyone going to guard me? And then he dunked it.
And I was like, I saw that play. And I was like, man, if anything.
They were just leaving the key open. Like they would start going back like offense.
I just don't understand it. Like I'm watching Indiana. I'm like, you guys realize this is a fucking playoff game, right? Like you guys are trying to make it to the Eastern. I don't know. I was surprised at Indiana's lack of like understanding of the moment.
You know what? Indy needs a top player that has like the veteran presence, like a mature fucking player. Yeah. You know, they have TJ, I mean, but he's a bench player. They need a
Siakam fighter. Should be it.
They need Kevin Durant.
Yeah, just Siakam put them doesn't in line. Give that vibe.
No, I don't think Siakam. I mean, Siakam basically was a minor player when I mean. He was critical to that Raptors championship, but it was right. Kawhi's team, right? I mean, right. And then since then, that Raptors team has basically done nothing.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I agree.
After the season, that's the player I would like to see them get. Someone with some leadership.
Well, and like that's where I think like the Knicks are. You know, like to me, like this is Jalen Brunson's team. Like he is the fucking leader of this team. You know what I mean? Like you can right. go around. Like Minnesota, like Anthony Edwards is the fucking leader of that team. You know, Jokic's leader, Jamal Murray, like one of those guys in Denver, right? Like you could tell, you know, Luka in Dallas, Boston. Actually, I don't even know. Boston necessarily has.
Yeah, Boston's a weird one.
Boston's a weird one, but that's probably why Boston has not won a title yet.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
You know, like
it feels like Tatum tries to be that guy, but
he's not.
Doesn't feel like he is.
Yeah, and I wonder how much that, like, I don't know if Brunson's ever going to win a title with the Knicks or just in general, but like he has that. Jimmy Butler has, you know, like that leadership ability, whatever it is, that quality that, you know, guys follow, they respect him, they listen to him. He's going to talk, everyone's going to shut up. Like he, you know, whatever it is. Yeah, Tatum. I know. Boston's a weird one. There's so many good players, but and like I think they were hoping like Marcus Smart tried to be that guy for all those years that he was there, and then you know, and then they traded him because they thought that would allow Tatum now to take it over. I don't think Tatum's taking it over.
No, I don't think so either.
I mean, they're probably going to steamroll through the East because there's no competition. But like you know, I'll be curious to see how they do. To me, the Celtics are going to make the NBA Finals, and then we'll see if you know if they have any leaders at that point. But yeah, that was my other big takeaway watching the Pacers. I was like, this team's so fucking unserious. I can't even. Yep. Then I started getting more upset. I was like, the Knicks better not fucking lose this series to this shitty team. That they're a good team, but like they're not. I don't know if they don't realize that they're in the playoffs or like that. It's just like, what the fuck are you doing?
And like, and you know, to continue my love for TJ real quick, like I know I'm biased, but again, that's another reason why I would give him big minutes because I feel like he is a leader. He's not good enough to be like that guy, but he has that leadership mentality. I think he brings that to the court, and I think you can see that and you can feel it. Like I don't know, I feel like if he was out there, they would have won that game.
Yeah. Now, but the problem now is. You know, can TJ replicate that? Like, he's not good enough.
He's not good enough to replicate that.
Do it again. You had that opportunity in game one, and you kind of basically were like, you know what? Let's go with whatever, and we're just gonna play our normal rotations and see. But yeah, I think it could have very easily been the TJ McConnell game. Now that being said, I mean TJ McConnell kills the Knicks. He's killed the Knicks for years.
Yeah, he gets up to play the Knicks for sure.
Oh, for sure. I'll be interested to see, like, can he keep this going?
Right.
Yeah, I can't see it. Yeah.
No way.
Just because of TJ McConnell. Like, I cannot see him doing that, but I'm not surprised him and Obi had great game ones. Great game ones. Now we'll see how they do in game two.
But Obi I was shocked he had a good game one. Like, TJ, I wasn't shocked because I've been following the Pacers most of the year, and whenever I watch them play, TJ, he's putting up a solid game.
Yeah, yeah, he's a good player. He's highly underrated.
Obi, I was shocked he did anything.
Me too. Because he was benched at one point during the season.
Yeah.
But he's kind of figured out that bench role with them a little bit more. And his three-point shooting had gotten a lot better when he was with the Knicks. I mean, I think he was a 40% three-point shooter this year for Indiana.
I mean, remember, he's still a young player. I mean, how old is he now?
I think he's as young as you think.
Probably not. I have no idea how old. I assume he's like 24.
26.
Oh, goddamn. Old man.
Yeah, well, because one of the criticisms is that he was in the same draft as Maxey.
Oh, Maxey's 23.
Yeah.
Oh, goddamn, yeah. 3-year difference? Yeah. Holy shit. So he must have been, what, like 24 or 23 when he was drafted?
Yeah, 20? Yeah, he was like a very old, like he played all 4 years or something like that, so he's a very old rookie.
Wow, okay, yeah. I mean, yeah. Again.
I mean, he's still young. He's 26. I'd go back to being 26. No,
It's funny the way like ages change because like, you know, 26 is old when you're talking about like,
well, so you know, a guy selling their
rookie contract. Is he a young, exciting player? No, he's not anymore.
No, he's not. No, he is, you know, who he is at this point.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's old for potential wise.
Yeah,
for the most
part. Like, yeah, he could still easily play. He could probably still easily play another 6 years in the league, but.
He can get better, but it's unlikely he takes a jump from like role player to starter or role player to all star. You know,
yeah. This is basically who he is now. He's going to be a rotation player on a decent team.
But I think his peak that he, and I'm not saying I believe he can reach this peak, but I'm just saying in general, I think a player of his caliber, like the peak that they would hope for, is like sixth man of the year candidate.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the only way he gets it, like the problem with Obi, in my opinion, and I like Obi, but like Indiana is like the perfect situation for him because they don't ask him to play defense. They just ask him to run up and down the court, you know, fly around and score.
Yep, like that's perfect situation.
Perfect situation. Like that's why he didn't fit on the Knicks, because he's not going to play defense, and Tibbs loses his mind at guys who don't play defense. I don't think he'd be a fit on the Celtics. I don't think he'd fit in a lot of places. I think he's just on a good fit. So, you know, he needs kind of a very much offensive focused team that kind of doesn't care as much that you're not going to play defense. But like honestly, those teams aren't going to win championships. So he'll probably have a nice career. But like, you know, he'll be here.
Time for the last man's opinion.
Go ahead.
Wrap it up. Oh, I don't have it.
Oh, my opinion. Okay.
Yeah.
Any last points before I shut Craig down?
Go ahead. You first.
Me?
I said Rich.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm still on Nixon 5. Nothing's changed for me.
I forget what I had. Did I say Nixon 6 or 5? I forget what I had. I think I probably said 6. 5 seems too early. I think Indiana's a completely different matchup and will be a tough matchup because I'm just going to try to run the Knicks in the ground. My opinion is I think the Knicks really need to find some more bench minutes, even if it's 5 or 7 minutes, whether it's Alec Burks or if it's Shake or whoever it is. And those are really the only two guys that they have. But I think just if their goal, which I know it is to get past this round and past the next round, there's no way they're going to be able to do that playing 6 guys, 7 guys. They have to find minutes from somebody else. Have to.
Nixon 6.
For Roland Barrielli, Rich Cagle, Dan Mara, and myself, Tommy Miro, thank you for listening to Last Man's Opinion, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye.